Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. Oh, I just looked. It is the 1st of March, a new month. This year is flying by. It's crazy. So it's going to be a good day. We got Andrew with us, Andrew Kim from Share SFR, which is a asset management company. Every time a guest comes onto the platform or comes onto the podcast, I always ask them to give me a preferred title. Andrew sent How to Be a Very Lazy Investor. I love that title because it's what everybody wants to do. So I'm super excited to jump into this and get a little insight into how to be a lazy investor. Andrew, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I always kind of give people sort of the most boring overview, you know, like our investment class and style is boring is safe. And, you know, we try to make all real estate has tied to some degree of risk, but we take the most boring asset class and type and try to make that as this least effortless and the least risky.
Yes. And that's what you want in an investment is boring because, you know, you don't want the ups and downs. You just want steady returns. Steady good returns is the name of the game there.
Yeah.
So I told you before we got on here, we always start the podcast with stories, and specifically your story on how you got into real estate. So take us to the beginning of your real estate story. How'd you get started?
Yeah. So I actually got in not by anyone sort of immediately around me, just sort of by the byproduct of watching people around me fail in life. And, I think, you know, as a son of immigrant family that were also like failed entrepreneurs, they always kind of raised me as, hey, go to school, get a great job, climb the ladder, do well. But I was like, hey, I'm a risk taker, but I do know that I don't want to fail and not have any money. So somehow, you know, I got real estate was ingrained in my head is like, this is the ultimate safety net. So always knew that real estate was interesting to me and I needed a safety net. I was trying to always build businesses throughout college, high school, every time. So during right after college, I had managed to save up a bunch of money, started doing some BRRRRs in the greater Toronto area. At that time, this was like 2010, average home is like north of 300,000 USD and really kind of sucked at it, I think, you know, but you know, I said, yeah, this is part-time, at least it's an asset. I was actually focused on tech career. And then my tech career brought me to California. And then I met some more individuals in the real estate game and said, hey, you should be really looking at, you know, various states, single family rentals. Was turned on to St. Petersburg, Florida in 2011. That's when I, you know, started looking at the economics of a single family detached home, 100K, high single digit cap rates. And in our formulas of cap rates in Canada, we don't put in property management typically because we just can't make the economics work. So that was like just a jaw dropping moment where it's like, oh my God, I can hire a property management company.
Oh,
like this was, yeah. So
yeah, I'm positive right there. That's interesting. So in Canada, it sounds like, well, I know Toronto is a very expensive market, similar to Seattle, probably even more
exactly.
So.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, like it just doesn't pencil, period. When you're talking about cash flow, if you put a property manager in there, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to work. You self-manage. So that is not part of the formula. So I'm like, you can't call it cap rate. You're not putting property management in there. So that was just it. I was like, okay, liquidate, bought some properties in St. Petersburg. And then sort of that was my foray into real estate. And then, you know, I was bogged down with my professional career. You know, several years went by, you know, bought a few and then let's talk like almost 10 years. And now I'm ready to kind of go back and build another tech company because I sold my previous one. And then the pandemic hits and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm stuck at home with three kids. I don't know how I'm going to build this next business. I built a wine habit while living in California. So I'm like, yeah. I got to sustain myself. So I'm like, okay, let's go buy some more of these St. Pete's types homes. And I had figured after 10 years, you know, the market would have evolved. There'd be like some great like digital vending machine of homes to find me these boring SFR homes. But no, there are marketplaces, there's Zillow. There's still a lot of piecemeal work, a lot of risk, a lot of effort. I'm like, I don't have time for this. I'm trying to not murder my children. So yeah. And then that was sort of the spawning of Share. It's like, how do you take this asset class and make it super simple for busy individuals that want something boring, but direct ownership? And that became the intersection of real estate and tech for me.
Nice, man. I love it. And I like when people have other careers and they're able to kind of integrate it with what they're doing in real estate. So it sounds like you started investing where you lived, and then you moved on to virtual investing. How was your introduction into virtual investing? Did you fly there and check out these properties, or were you buying sight unseen?
Yeah, sight unseen. I think, you know, I was so focused on my professional career in California. And then, you know, I'd already had enough headaches with real estate. And, you know, I sell two and I got more, like, way more units in Florida. And, you know, at that time it was very turnkey, and I was using air quotes because we were using, it was sort of a vertically integrated real estate agent. He had foothold in Florida.
He has the property.
Yeah, he has the property. Contractor. He is the property manager, and you know, went through that. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is amazing. And so I did go sight unseen. It wasn't even an Excel spreadsheet pro forma. It was like a copy and paste of numbers in Word document. I was just like, okay, property. I think property management had me like sold. So sight unseen. And then I think that was in most of our sort of clients' world, that's the hardest pill, the remote investing. And at that point, I was like, what can I lose here? Yeah. So I'm like, I got a brick and mortar asset.
Yeah, makes sense. Why St. Pete?
Again, it was like a referral. Someone who was close to me that I met out in California that was actually helping me operate my tech business. She personally invested through this individual, and she's actually from Sarasota, Florida. She's like, I know this area very well. There was a bit of degree of trust there. But look, yeah, those were like considered C-class properties, and man, they've like 4X'd over the 10 years. So happy about that.
Florida. Yeah. Florida has been, if you invested early, that's definitely a place to be.
Yeah. Except my insurance rates are killing me now.
Yeah. I can imagine. So let's tell me a little bit more about Share. What is your guys' model? It sounds like you guys are taking investors' money and then investing it as, you know, you guys are the asset manager. You go out there, you buy the properties, and you manage them.
Yeah. So I would say like there's two parts to our business. One is sort of the acquisition, and then the long-term sort of asset management piece. And a lot of our clients kind of go from beginning to end. So on the acquisition side, you know, we work with our clients to understand their buy box, and their financing strategy. So we'll do all the sort of number crunching up front, and then our system will sort, kind of sift through on market and off market deals to find a match. As asset managers, we've got master policies with large property management companies that typically service institutions, master landlord policy. So we can kind of do all that underwriting, the renovation, quoting, all that upfront. So understanding what kind of numbers they want to back into, we'll go out and source that, shortlist it, and then present that to our client. If they like what we see, we'll conduct the diligence, get the renovation quote, the timeline, the project management. And if they want to proceed, we'll help them close that out for an acquisition fee, which we take at the end. And then once they take ownership, it's direct ownership. We don't own a piece of it. Once there's a tenant in place, there's a property management and asset management fee. Asset management fee is ours. The property management fee gets passed through our partner. And then we are essentially the asset management of record. We try to scale their portfolio. And what we say is we're trying to 10X your portfolio over the next 10 years. So you can focus on your personal and professional life. And when you're ready to retire, you can fire us and inherit this big portfolio.
There you go. I love it. So it sounds like you're kind of taking the role of the guy who you first invested with in, you know, back in the day in St. Pete.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Except we're trying to, you know, take a unbiased approach to regions, not just kind of focus on one pocket.
Yeah. Unbiased approach to regions. So you guys invest all over the US. Is there, what other markets are you investing based on what your client wants to invest in, or are there specific metros that you have the numbers, you think they're just killing it, and you want to focus on the investments there?
Yeah, so we know which sort of the major markets, states, and metros that are good year over year. We do filter based on certain headwinds. Like we might be, so particularly across the Sun Belt and Midwest is where we look. But right now we're kind of tiptoeing around certain Sun Belt states just because of either climate change or price bubbles. And then within that, there's certain metros, and then we will guide the clients that here are the list of metros. If you want to do some independent research, you can either add, remove, that's up to you. But we've got property management coverage across the board there. And then what we typically do is when we search, it's metro wide, but then the data we pay for and we have access to is actually at the zip code level. So if there's a match, we'll zoom in on the zip code, and if the zip code isn't the greatest, then we'll kind of terminate and keep looking.
Yeah, it's I like focusing, especially on single family investing by the zip code is my new favorite thing. I used to just like choose a metro, call property managers, ask which areas they liked, and then just kind of draw a little circle around that area, you know,
Yeah,
half a mile
exactly.
wide, and invest there. But if you can just get a number of zip codes and then pull that list
Yeah.
that are, you know, good for investing, that's a good way to do it.
Yep.
So for big metros, what are the top five that you guys are looking at? Or just give me top three.
Dallas, Fort Worth, Atlanta, and right, it was Charlotte, Raleigh, but I would say now it's more of a sort of a Memphis and Lake region. Yeah.
Okay. DFW, that still is good on a cash flow basis.
No, but for our sort of higher, those who kind of want the appreciation play, they don't really care for the cash flow. That's kind of where they want to go. And some of our clients like looking for sort of deeper rental opportunities like the A, B sort of class. Yeah, but I agree that those aren't definitely not cash flow plays. Those are strictly like I'm riding this out for appreciation or diversification.
I've bought self-storage facilities in DFW, and I love the market, but I've looked at single family, and it just nothing seems to work when I
The
look
cap
at
rates are real
rentals.
low.
It's a popular market, so it makes sense. Cool. Then how about for your own portfolio? What is the next like 2 to 3 years look like for you?
So I sort of go and I like the high risk stuff now, I think. So I want deep rental opportunities, pennies on a dollar type stuff. I think the other day I was looking at like a fire, like a house that caught fire. But yeah, for me, I'm all about buying the worst house in the best pot, or the worst house in the neighborhood and trying to get it up to a certain level. But now also looking at sort of C neighborhoods that potentially could become B's over the next 5 years. And then like
That's a
I'm
hard
really
play.
I'm towing the line of like I, like yeah I'm towing that line. Before it was like beat up A's and B's, but now I'm like, hey, do I take a beat up C or an infill in a C,
Trying to predict where like gentrification is going to
Yeah, that's a
take
tough one.
place is it's risky. If you get it right though, it pays
Yeah.
off. So I hope you get it right. That's that'll be good for you. All right, well, hey man, that wraps us up for the main section. It's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Cool.
All right. Starts with education, any form, could be books, could be movies, could be Netflix shows, whatever. Give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate.
General life wisdom, I refer to a tech book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. It's like a CEO journey of just shit. Like, sorry, I don't know if I should be
Getting
swearing
punched
or
in
not,
the
but
face until you see success.
exactly. So I feel like learn from other people's mistakes, understand what stress looks like, so
What
that you
stress looks
can,
like. Okay.
yes, so that you're not, when it hits you in the face, when you've got a deal and something's going wrong, you're down to the 11th hour, that this is other people have done this, so you can get through it. So I felt like that was a good roller coaster of a book. And sorry, the second one was the, what was your second question
General life
around?
wisdom or real estate,
Oh, real estate. So for me, I do like, I like podcasts and I like reading the forums. So I'm a bigger pockets kind of guy. And then, I kind of have an endless sort of reel of real estate people on my social media. And those short clips are just like gold for me.
It's funny how You know, you don't need a 2-hour movie or a, you know, 300-page book to get motivated. You know, you can just get a little quote that.
Yeah. You need them bite-sized pieces, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Then it can get you up. All right. Next question is for your younger self. Let's go back to the Andrew who, 2010, who was just making his first investment. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Yeah. Look, ambition is a great thing to harness, but be humble at the same time. There are people out there that you should be learning from. So even though you're gritty, I know in the real estate world, it's like take action. Great. Take action, but take smart action. Find professionals, find mentors, find people who are willing to teach you and coach you. Don't be such a stubborn ass and just try to go at this by yourself.
that sentiment has been echoed across, I don't know how many episodes. We're on number, I think you're number 450 or something like
that. Yeah.
And so many people say that. And me, myself, I should even take that to heart more than I do. Learn from people, especially so many people have been successful in real estate and there are so many good examples out there. So I think that's a good lesson for your younger self. All right. Next question is about your business. The first three positions you fill form the foundation of your business. So what were they for you? And if you did it again, would you do it in a different order?
I don't think I would do it again in a different order, but the three are my business partners. So my head of technology, because we are trying to look at as many data points as possible. My CFO, who she's a CPA in both Canada and US with a big pedigree in real estate taxes. Mm-hmm. So she understands sort of out-of-state taxes. And then the fourth is my head of investments, who used to be the executive director of one of the largest foreign national private equity firms in the US multifamily and single family space. So he's been directly involved with over $7 billion of transactions in AUM. So he's the one underwriting and looking at all the deals.
There you go. Yeah. Finding good partners is difficult, but once you find them, it is, it's key.
Yes.
All right. We already talked about this a little, but I'm going to ask it again and I'm going to whittle it down to just one metro. So the United States is a big place. There's a lot of opportunity. Give me the single metro you're most excited about investing in today.
Oh, man. I like Greater Georgia. Oh, man, that's a cop out. outskirts of Atlanta, I guess. Okay. Outskirts of Atlanta. You know, they keep popping up new manufacturing, Rivian. There's just like new job growth there is pretty aggressive.
Yeah, like the secondary markets.
Yes.
Yeah, nice. All right. Next question is about finding the deal. It all starts with getting in contact with the seller, writing up that purchase agreement. What is your favorite way to generate leads and find new deals?
Yeah, our network of wholesalers is well, in this market, they're bringing the ones of the gold. So finding solid wholesale partners and just constantly feeding them deals and being very close communication is great. So when we have a client, we just kind of tell them, this is the buy box, go search. And you'll see, we assume that a lot more of their deal flow is coming to us versus their other email list distribution people, folks.
Yeah. Now I can say that from firsthand experience. If you find a good buyer, from a whole, if you're wholesaling a property and you find a good buyer, you definitely are going to be bringing them, more deals than other people, because it's easier to, bring somebody that you know can close, a deal versus, you know, make more money on another deal with somebody else right. that might not close. And so, makes a lot of sense. All right. Next question is about lessons learned. Not every deal goes the way we expect it. Sometimes a wrench is thrown into the mix and the deal goes a little sideways, but those are the opportunities where we learn the biggest lessons and we get to bring it on to our next deal. So what was a deal that went a little bit sideways for you and what was the lesson you pulled from it?
Yeah. So your first portfolio purchase with, as well as your first time using a specific lender on a portfolio loan was probably my biggest mistake. Mm. I think having two firsts at the exact same time is a risk factor. So if you're going to kind of change your sort of buy box profile or sort of your vehicle or asset type, like try to minimize the firsts. You know, bring in seasoned players around there that you know how they operate so that you can minimize the risk of closing. So, yeah, I think my first biggest headache was buying a portfolio from a foreign investor in a different time zone and using a large lender for the first time.
Gotcha. Yeah. When you're going through something for the first time, there's a lot of lessons you got to learn. So yeah, that makes sense. If you're going through multiple firsts, sometimes it's hard to keep things straight.
Yeah.
All right. That leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. You've given us a lot to think about. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. Where can they find you? And then what can they expect when they reach out?
Yeah, you can come down to Share SFR, single family rental, sharesfr.com. You know, you can get create a free account, look at some of our past deals, and then even reach out directly to us, and you'll get one of the executive teams. And then, yeah, if you're looking to get some deal flow, then sign up and book a call.
There you go. I will put that link in the show notes. So if y'all want to reach out, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down that full description. And in there, you can find Andrew's link. All right, man, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions, reach out to me, Gabe at therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.